Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, from bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. My guest today is a tireless worker who is literally on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Her world is full of drama and emergencies. It's also full of a lot of snuggles and love. Nope, she's not a doctor or firefighter or even a pastor. Well, not exactly. My guest today is Sarah Penhaligon, the founder and guiding spirit behind Center Valley Animal Rescue, which is an amazing place dedicated to rescuing animals, both domestic and wildlife. Did you hear about that coyote who accidentally wandered into the hospital a few weeks ago? The poor thing was more frightened than the patients or the hospital staff who saw it racing down the hall. Mrs. Coyote was so desperate to flee that she crashed through a plate glass window trying to get to the indoor courtyard at the hospital. The glass slashed her nose and face, and she was bleeding profusely and cowered in a corner in fright and pain. So who gets called when we have an animal in distress? Well, obviously, Sarah. She's on the case no matter what time of day or night. She managed to tranquilize the coyote. They took her back to Center Valley, where Sarah and her team stitched her up. Shortly after, Mrs. Coyote was escorted safely out of town and returned to the world. Case closed. Anyhow, welcome to the show, Sarah. Before we get to the part about the current operations at Center Valley, I think our listeners would really like to know a little bit about your background. Let's start at the very beginning. Are you a local girl born and bred on the Olympic Peninsula?
No, I was actually raised in Kirkland, Juanita area, and that's where I grew up.
Okay, what'd your folks do?
My dad is a civil engineer, and he is still working, although working on retiring. My mom would be thrilled if he would just be retired, but he's passionate about what he does, and he loves to work. Good. So my mom was a drug and alcohol counselor, and so she worked in the nonprofits. So I grew up with hardworking parents.
Okay, and are you an only child?
Nope, I have a brother, and my brother now lives in San Jose with his family, and he's a lawyer. He's got two kids and a wonderful wife.
Great. Well, I always like to ask about people's teenage years because it's such a time of change for literally everyone. And some teenage kids are very focused. They know exactly what they want to do. A great deal of others don't have a clue. So where would you fall on that spectrum?
I knew what I wanted to do from the time I was probably 3 years old. So
okay.
It was work with animals. My original goal was to be a veterinarian. And so going through school, I knew I needed to get mostly A's and be a very good student. Not to say I didn't have some fun. And my parents could attest to the fact that I was definitely a challenge.
Did you have pets at home?
We did, yes. So we had cats and we had a dog all growing up. We had always a dog and 2 to 3 cats. So my best friend growing up was my cat Snoopy.
Okay. And so you knew you wanted to be a vet. Did you practice at all on your home pets?
No, but I would bring home anything and everything. So, I mean, from bringing home bags full of garter snakes and sticking them in my brother's bed to, you know, frogs and salamanders and everything else that moved. I got sent home from school for bringing snakes to school. I got sent home from school for bringing bumblebees to school when I was a little kid.
Okay. Well, obviously, if you're intending to be a vet, you have to go to university. So where did you end up going?
So I ended up with academic scholarships to go to WSU, and I did go over to WSU for a short time. Okay. My first lab, and this was in the 90s, and so things were a bit different then. It's a little bit more, you have more options now as to how to get through vet school. At the time, it was animal sciences, and animal sciences is really about what animals can do for humans versus what a human can do for animals. And I was definitely already vegetarian and didn't believe in killing animals, wanted to save animals. My first lab was going to be meatpacking 101. And I, of course, said, there's no way. I am not doing meatpacking 101 as my first lab.
What is meatpacking 101? What do they actually do?
I think they go to slaughterhouses. I did not do meatpacking 101.
Well, I can understand that.
So, yeah.
So what happened?
I marched into my advisor's office, and I was actually fairly quiet at that time, and I told him what my beliefs were. Mm-hmm. He told me my beliefs were wrong, and if I planned on going into the veterinary field, that those couldn't be my beliefs. And I think that's where I found my voice, because I had some choice language to use for him, and I stormed out and slammed the door, and that was, I did a little bit of talking to the wildlife department to figure out, is this something I could do, go through a different department and still go through vet school? Uh-huh. And they said, yes, it would be extremely difficult. They'd only had one person do it before, and it would probably take 10 years to get through school.
Oh, dear.
And I had a boyfriend at home who was a tattoo artist and lived on a sailboat who was saying, you should drop out of school and come back and move on my boat with me. So, I mean, I was 18. I of course, said, okay. And I hopped on a Greyhound bus and left school. Sort of every parent's worst nightmare. That was me.
Okay. And so where was the boat?
The boat was actually on Lake Union. Uh-huh. And so we lived in Seattle for a little while. I worked at a veterinary hospital in Seattle. And my truck got stolen from the parking lot. And I was like, I'm done. We're getting out of Seattle. And we moved over here because of the wooden boat community. And that is what landed us in Port Townsend area. And we actually lived out at the old alcohol plant in Hadlock. And that brought us here.
One question. You said you were working at a veterinary hospital somewhere. Mm-hmm. Did you get a license or something, or were you just sort of general help?
Yeah, so I started when I was in high school working at veterinary hospitals, doing kennels, assisting, and I did that for quite a while. And then I also went, I worked during the summer at a horse camp, horse ranch. And then when I worked in Seattle, I was a veterinary assistant at that vet hospital. And then when I moved over here, I got a couple different veterinary jobs, and I worked and I ended up getting my veterinary technician's license. But originally I was a veterinary assistant.
Okay. And then you became a veterinary technician. I didn't understand the difference between the two.
Yes. At one time there wasn't a lot of difference. Now there definitely is. There's a lot of things that assistants aren't allowed to do, and you have to have a license to be able to do.
Okay. So you left the job in Seattle. You got a job here at a vet or multiple vets?
I worked. So originally there wasn't a job instantly at a vet. So I worked at multiple places. I worked as a caregiver. I worked for humans. And so then I also worked at the Port Townsend Athletic Club. And then we ran a tattoo parlor. So we had opened up a tattoo parlor, and I did that too. And so I had all of that going on. And then fairly quickly, I found a veterinary job, and I worked at Oak Bay Animal Hospital for 3 years. I left there in probably 2001 or so, maybe 2002. And then I worked at Chimacum Valley Vet after that, and I worked there for 14 years.
Okay. Why did you leave there? What happened? How?
I like to say I retired.
Well, yeah, you retire, you know.
So I was really too busy at Center Valley. So,
oh, you already had Center Valley then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Center Valley started out in 2002.
Okay.
And it was a group of friends and myself, and we were a foster network. And pretty soon, all of our friends and family were saturated in animals, and we decided we'd better grow and do something different. So in 2004, we moved to our current site in Quilcene, and it did not look like it does today. It had been logged about 6 months earlier, and they literally just, they went through the creek, the wetlands, everything. And they filled everything in so that they could drive over it with their logging equipment.
So did you buy the property?
Yeah, I ended up going to my parents and taking a loan from them originally to buy the property. And then pretty quickly it turned into my parents saying, you know, with what you make in the veterinary field, you're never going to be able to pay us back in your lifetime. So you should probably go ahead and just do a long-term lease for Center Valley. And so that's what we ended up doing.
Okay.
And we did a 20-year lease.
And so At first, though, it sounds like you had a lot of work to do to just get the land usable.
Yeah, so we ended up from the conservation district buying thousands of trees and putting them into the wetlands and creeks and restoring 5 to 6 acres of wetland and creek buffers. And then we also cleared the property, so got rid of stumps, got rid of slash piles. There were 100-foot slash piles on the property. It had been an old metal smeltering plant, and so there was old mining type of equipment that was left on the property. There was a 4,000-square-foot building there, but it was all dry rot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was lots of beer cans and tire track marks through the building, and it was a party place. So I'm sure that the local kids were pretty upset when we moved out there.
Yeah, took their good spot.
Yeah, it was a perfect spot.
Yeah.
We had to do demolition days, sledgehammers to walls. It was a lot of fun. I didn't grow up in the country, so I had to learn how to build fences and learn how to do everything that needed to happen to run a ranch. And build all of this so that we could bring the animals in and then rebuild the building and do all of these things.
So there was only one building.
There was only one building at the time. Uh-huh. It's our big main headquarters. So it's a 4,000-square-foot metal building. And it's the same footprint that it was then, but it's all new rooms. We redid everything because it was all dry rot.
Okay, so you started in 2004, demolition.
In Quilcene, yes.
Yeah, and how many acres do you have?
30 acres altogether.
And at this point in time, how many buildings and, you know, what do you have there?
So now we have a pretty good size center. So we have our main building. Our main building houses our office and our whole medical facility. So we have a surgical room. We have a treatment room. Digital x-ray, dental equipment, dental x-ray, everything, ultrasound, all of the things a vet hospital is going to have. So we have a full hospital there. And we've got an awesome crew of volunteer veterinarians that come out and volunteer with us. We also have our cat rooms that are in the main building, small animal room, exotics such as reptiles, birds, those types of animals. We've added a dog building to the south side of the property. But our dogs had always been housed at the main building. We still do have some dogs there, but the other dogs are on the other side now, and we've expanded that. And so that's our main building. Our outbuildings are, we have big barns. So we've got one that is housing small ruminants like sheep, goats, llamas. It's got a bunny stall with a big bunny area built for them. It has poultry areas outside, intern apartment upstairs. We do a internship program. So we take veterinary students, technician students, wildlife biology students, kind of anyone that's wanting to work with animals and help figure out what path they might want to go on. So we do that, and they can stay right on site. We also have a quarantine barn that houses our quarantine farm animals. And then we have another big barn that has other farm animals, pigs, horses, and all of that.
Okay. So you have sort of two, broadly speaking, two types of animals there. You have domestic animals and wildlife. So let's divide them up a little bit at first. So for domestic animals, basically dogs, cats, birds, and roughly how many animals might you have on site at a given point in time now?
Yeah, so we normally have anywhere from 150 to 200 domestic and farm animals.
Oh, that's quite a few.
Yes. And if we have a huge cruelty case, that can be a lot more. So yeah, it might be hundreds more.
Wow. And on the wildlife side, what's the range of animals there?
Yeah, so the wildlife center is actually up by my house. And so it is separate from the main, where all the domestic animals and farm animals are. And that ranges from season. So right now we just have two otters in care, two raccoons in care, an opossum, and a little Douglas squirrel. So this is a pretty quiet time. In a few months from now, when baby season starts, we could have up to 70 wild animals in the wildlife area at one given time.
Are there any animals on either side that basically you draw the line and say, we don't take X animal?
Every time I draw a line, we end up having them come in. So
okay.
Lines are meant to be broken,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty much if it's for domestics, if it is a cruelty case, we're going to make room for them. So whether that is a ton of waterfowl or bison or horses or whatever it might be, we make room. And in the wildlife department, we're licensed to take just about everything, even if it's just for initial care. You know, even bear, cougars, things like big animals like that, we can still take in.
You were on the show once a couple of years ago, and at that point in time, you had, in fact, a herd of bison and ended up adopting a baby bison. First, can you tell us that story? I mean, how many bison were there? Strikes me there were quite a few.
Yeah, there were 8. And so we had, it was a starvation case. It was a local case.
Wow.
And it's since gone through. He was prosecuted. So 8 counts of first degree animal cruelty. So that's the maximum. So that was a great outcome for that case. Obviously, we wish the animals hadn't been in that condition. But the adult animals, we ended up housing them for 1.5 years. Which was a lot for a herd of bison. We weren't really set up to do that.
Did they all survive?
They all survived. And so we ended up sending all the adults ended up going to a rescue sanctuary that's in Texas. And they're doing great. We actually get updates on them. And they're on a much bigger acreage and kind of flat land where bison should be. And then there was a baby that was born about 3 weeks after we rescued these animals. And the mom was still completely emaciated. And the baby was premature and really small and weak, so he couldn't nurse. So we tried 3 times to pull him and tube feed him and then put him back with mom. But each time we did that, we were risking our lives because mom wanted to kill us. And so it wasn't an easy thing. And so we ended up, after the 3rd time, when he still couldn't get up and he still couldn't nurse, we ended up making the decision to pull him. And so he was actually raised in my living room and had multiple blood transfusions and IVs for a month and tube feeding for a month. And he's now not little.
Yeah.
He couldn't be introduced to the herd. They actually tried to kill him.
Oh, dear.
So I wouldn't really say that we adopted him because it wasn't really a choice. It was more as default. We ended up with him.
So how big is he now?
I'm about 5'5", so he's about 5'5". He's about my height, maybe a little bit taller than me now with his hump. And so,
but yeah, he weighs a hell of a lot more than you.
Oh, he does. Yes.
How much, roughly?
Glad he weighs more than me.
Yeah.
But he's probably, if I had to guess, he hasn't been on a scale for a long time, maybe 1,400 pounds or something. He's a big boy.
And he's still growing.
He's still growing. Yes.
And he still thinks you're mama.
He does. He loves me so much. And just enough that he loves to crush fences and gates to try to find me. He does come very well. So when he's escaped, I can call him and he will come running from wherever he's at and jump and crush more fences to get to me.
What's his name?
His name's Tatonka.
Uh-huh. And does he have any animal friends?
He does. He's got, he actually has quite a few animal friends. When he was younger, he had a dog. He got too big for his dog and a bit too dangerous. So now he has a steer named Benson, who's a Jersey steer, and about his size. So they're pretty close in size. Benson's probably a little bit shorter, but a little wider in areas. They're just built different, but they both have big horns and they can spar.
And they enjoy each other's company.
They definitely do. He has horses as friends as well. So,
yeah. Okay. So that was clearly a case of animal abuse, but there have been others in the past couple of years. Didn't you tell me where recently you took in 250 animals in a case but it was mixed. It wasn't all one type of animal.
Yeah. So we did last year about this time, we were working a big case about 250 animals from Clallam County. And that was the biggest case that we've ever had to take in. So we had to pull all of those animals through our facility. We ended up with 20 Anatolian Shepherds, which are big dogs. And we ended up with an emu, a goat, and lots of poultry. So there's chickens, lots of geese, lots of ducks, and they all needed care. So like every goose that we pulled in from that site, they actually needed injectable fluids, vitamin injections on intake. So wow. Some of them couldn't even walk.
Wow. That's incredible. And so have most of them been placed somewhere now?
Most of them have been. We do still have five geese up for adoption and three ducks and five roosters. So from that case, and we do still have one Anatolian shepherd that needs a home.
I didn't realize you could adopt things like geese or
Oh, yes, you ducks. Can adopt about everything. Yeah. Well, if it's on the domestic side of things, we're not going to be adopting out our wildlife.
Oh, okay. So, okay. No eagles or hawks.
No.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, people in general are aware that you run spay and neuter clinics.
Yes.
Can you explain what you're doing there and how often, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So our spay-neuter program is a huge part of what we do. And it is one of our ways that we can kind of rescue in place and we don't actually have to take animals in. I always like to say my goal in life is to not be needed. And if everyone's responsible and takes care of their animals, then I won't be needed. But unfortunately, that probably won't happen in my lifetime. So our spay-neuter program is a great way to give back to the community. So low-income individuals can call us, and if they need an animal spayed and neutered, they can get on our waiting list. And right now, we do have about 200 animals on our waiting list to get spayed and neutered. We try to do weekly clinics. It really is up to when our veterinarians can come. And then how many can I actually do too? Because I have to be involved in all those clinics as well. In our clinics, we might do a smaller clinic of 8 animals. And then our bigger clinics might have more like 30 animals. Mm. And so we can get quite a few spays and neuters done at each clinic.
That's another thing that's interesting. All of your people there are basically volunteers.
We do have some staff, but most of the people that are coming out to the center are volunteers.
So you are in need of volunteers. If our listeners are hearing this and they think, well, most of the listeners are probably not vets, but maybe there are.
Yeah.
They're welcome, but there are other jobs that people could fill, right?
Definitely. Yeah, we need everything. And I like to tell people if they have a gift or a talent that they think we need, they should tell us because we don't always know what we need until someone tells us. Our day-to-day animal care and giving animals socialization and attention, all of those things, those are volunteers that are helping with these. You know, maintenance projects, fence building, we have fundraising committee. Obviously, if we don't raise funds, we won't be there. So all of those things are super important. There's office work. There's helping with our spay-neuter clinics. We need people to help check in and check out patients, sometimes even holding patients in the back. So there's a lot of things that people can do there. Transport. A lot of times we do a prison program with Clallam Bay. So maybe it's going and picking up a cat from prison and bringing it back, or vice versa, or picking up a wild animal that's injured and bringing it to us.
So that is something you're doing that is sort of interesting. You actually send cats to prison to get socialized, right? Is that what it's for?
Yes, we do. So if we get, it actually helps a lot when we have big cruelty cases because we can take in these cats that are under-socialized, like a lot of hoarding case cats are.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like, what do you do with a whole bunch of under-socialized cats? There's just not enough people to work with all
of
them.
They're scared and strike out and
so
everything.
So we get their medical needs done, and then we can send them to the prison, and they live one-on-one with one of the incarcerated individuals. And there are cat handlers. So there's a program. It's a cat handling program. And they spend 24/7 with that cat and socialize them.
It probably helps both parties involved.
It definitely does. Yeah. We get letters from the guys out there saying how important this program is to them. And it's
great.
It can bring a tear to your eye how wonderful it is.
So you basically run on donations, and I think it's very important for our listeners to understand that you need donations to keep going.
Yes.
And there is one thing that I was a little confused about. I thought that Center Valley was what I would call a no-kill facility, and yet it is and it isn't. Can you explain the line on that?
Yes. So with our domestic animals, we would be what most places would consider a no-kill facility, right. Meaning that we don't euthanize for lack of space. We don't do, we're not euthanizing because they're a feral cat, right? We're sending them to get socialized or we're finding appropriate homes for a feral cat. When we would euthanize a domestic animal is for end of life. And given we will go to a lot of expense and extent to take care of the animals that come in. We have a full medical facility, so we can do emergency surgeries, orthopedic surgeries. We've sent animals to universities for MRIs and CAT scans. But when we've exhausted all options and that animal's quality of life is not good, then we do have to put them down. So and it's their in their best interest.
It's a quality of life thing.
Exactly.
And with domestic animals, if once they're healthy again, the goal is to place them in an appropriate home.
Yes.
What about on the wildlife side? What do you do when the animal is cured or better?
Yeah. So with our wildlife, the goal is obviously partially the same and rehabilitate, get them healthy.
Right.
But the end goal is release. So if those animals are not going to be releasable, typically those animals are going to have to be put down. And so we're definitely are having to lose more wildlife patients than domestic patients. But an animal that's been wild its whole life, it doesn't want to be locked in a cage. Yeah. And legally, you just can't keep them. So we do have to make decisions on those with those animals on a regular basis.
That must be difficult.
It definitely can be difficult, but, you know, people think of euthanasia sometimes as a failure, but sometimes it's a gift.
Yeah.
It's an ending of suffering.
Yeah, the quality of life. I mean, I can certainly see that an eagle, you know, to lock an eagle in a small cage or even a big cage would be just a terrible thing.
Yes. So, So if our animals are not, and if they come in on intake and we know that they are not going to be fixable for release,
yes.
Then we euthanize them on intake because they're terrified of us. All they want is they want us to go away.
Yeah.
You know, it's like even our animals that have sort of gotten used to being at our place in rehabilitation, they want two things from us. They want food and us to leave.
Yeah. I can definitely see that. Well, we're just virtually out of time. I did want to ask you if maybe this can be answered fairly quickly. When we were supposed to meet the first time, you had an emergency situation with a cat that was in bad shape. And I'm just wondering, did she pull through and did the one surviving kitten pull through?
They are both doing fairly well. Mama's definitely a little miracle cat. And I can't say she's totally out of the woods, but I can say she's eating. And she was purring for me this morning. And her kitten is doing well. I'm feeding her kitten, but it's with mom. And so I think kitten's giving her a good reason to live, too.
Good.
They are super cute and sweet.
Well, you guys do amazing work there. And I want to urge our listeners to get out your checkbook or credit card or whatever. And should they go to your website?
Yes. Donations can definitely go through our website. It is centervalleyanimalrescue.org. And we have PayPal links on there. You can always send a check to us directly. Our address is 11900 Center Road, Quilcene. So that's another good way. We are going to be opening up for tours again on Saturdays and Sundays. If people want to come and see our facility, they can come do that.
And at any time of year, you do have animals available for adoption.
Oh, yes. Lots of them.
And the charge varies depending on...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but they're all spayed, neutered, vaccinated. They are healthy, or if there's a medical problem, people are going to know about it going in.
Okay, great. All right. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today has been Sarah Penhaligon, founder of Center Valley Animal Rescue.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Marianne McNellis and edited by Taylor Clark.